You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
And we want to hear from you at 514-790-0800. This is what we do for you for the full hour. We bring in an expert. Walter Assey from Renovco is the guy we're talking about, and you can pick his brain. Sometimes you just need to talk to someone to find out which direction you need to go in to fix that problem at home, that little project you have going. And we're going to start with something off topic. So what is who is your prediction to win the World Cup?
You know,
you're live on the radio now, by the way.
This is what we're dedicating this hour for. No. It's really the World Cup. But we're actually talking about this. Yesterday was a shocker, Brazil and Croatia. That was a nice game. And, you know, I find a lot of these, second-ranked countries as far as soccer are really upping up their games, this World Cup. And it's exciting to see.
You still haven't given me a prediction, you
know. I think today Spain will win. Although Morocco have done an amazing job thus far, but it is what it is. France will probably take on England because of the speed of the team. But you know, it's the ball is round, so you'd never know, right? You'd never know how things go. It's just what we, you know. There's this supercomputer that keeps on predicting, but they're not getting it right this year.
514-790-0800 to talk to Walter Assey. That's the number to call for the Home Improvement Show. Call now and grab a line. Did I see you on television on the CTV News at one day this week? And what were you talking about?
I told you I'm a TV guy. I keep on telling you that.
You're in the wrong medium. No, I think it was, what was it about that you were on?
It was for the war veterans.
Legion.
The Legion.
Right.
That's correct.
Course.
They're underinsured, and we are trying to get them on the right track. They're doing several fundraisers, and we're trying to get them on track. So that's, you know, that was primarily the reason we were covering this.
The Legion out in Roxborough on the west side.
Roxborough, yeah. That burned down. That's correct.
Yeah.
And we're hoping they have a fundraiser. They have a comedy show actually in. They have a comedy show in January, I think 28th.
Okay.
And Joey Elias is doing the comedy, and he's donating his time, which is amazing.
Joey's a great guy. He always steps up.
He's unbelievable, yeah. And we thank him for that. Tickets are going to be up for grabs soon, and hopefully they'll be sold out.
514-790-0800, the number to call. You can also text in at 514-800. I noticed when I was... driving around yesterday, running a few errands. There's two, three, four construction projects in my neighborhood. Some remaining lots of land. So, how long into the winter season can work go on when you're building a home?
You know, we were just talking about it. I'm actually doing a new construction right now, and we started just a couple of weeks ago. And you know, as long as the foundation is poured in the right conditions and. Because I don't like additives and calcium and all these kinds of additives that you do on concrete. The lumber itself is not
an issue
if you get it soon and you install it fast and you cover it fast. I mean, I think 90 days is where your threshold for keeping any lumber exposed. That's, you know, as per manufacturers or sawmills recommendations. So
3 months.
If you have a very slow contractor or a contractor that leaves the site and comes back to it later, you don't want that magic number to be passed.
Hmm.
And you're pushing the envelope. Like I'm saying the maximum. Because you will see that the lumber will turn white. And that means that now it's not in good shape at all. And we've been to inspection sites that we've seen that happen, and our recommendation was to demolish the whole frame and rebuild it from scratch, because for us, that wood is no good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we say, yes, you can go through the winter. The other issue I have with winter works is the exterior part. Obviously, you're dealing with human beings that have fingers and hands and feelings. So if the guy is working minus 30, yeah. I mean, you know, he's not going to be doing that much of a great job as he's comfortable in 20 degrees and, you know. So there's that aspect that you always have to keep in mind. There's a roofing aspect where you don't want to install the shingles in cold temperature because, you know, the shingles want that heat so they can stick adequately to your roof. So there are issues, caulking, you know, many different issues that could come in play for the quality of job.
How's the day like today where it's sunny and -5 but feels like -10?
So it depends what we're doing. If we're installing like Maybach siding, you don't have a problem. You have a staple gun and you're stapling. The issue that you will have is with the workers and his gun, because every time, now and then, the gun will freeze on him. So you have to bring it inside. So there's a bit of waste of time. But if you're doing, I would not pour concrete today, for example, okay? Or I would not, we wanted to install window ledges on a job. And we had to use cement glue. But the problem is with these temperatures, when it freezes, all that water freezes and then expands and then it loses its adhesion power. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, that sill that you're installing will pop out in no time because it's not adequate. The material does not have the time to adequately cure. As per the manufacturer's recommendation, they tell you you need minimum 4 degrees centigrade. So each product, what I'm trying to say is each product and each type of material ask you for a certain temperature to be respected for it to, you know, to be optimized in its, you know, performance. And that's what I always say, read the label.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that's very important with this is if you read the label and let's say you're dealing with grout, not every manufacturer have the same instructions because we run into this issue with tradesmen all the time. They're used to a certain grout, and they know that they have to add that much water to that grout. And then they use another brand, and then they're doing the same application. That's a mistake.
Okay.
Read the label, because you will see it's a different instruction.
What was I going to ask you? I just completely lost my train of thought. It had to do with winter weather. It'll come back to me. 514-790-0800. When it comes to... I'm still thinking what I was going to ask you. Don't you hate that? Let's just shut down the show until I think of what I was going to ask
you. I'm going to give you part of my coffee.
Is there anything that's time sensitive right now in terms of getting... here's what I was going to ask you about. You know, in our backyards, you know, whether you have the air conditioner or the heat pump, what have you. Do you always recommend covering it before the snow comes in?
The heat pump?
Yeah.
No. I mean...
The air conditioner, for example.
Yeah, well, you need to have a cover, the actual cover on the unit, but you know it. But you don't need to cover it, and you shouldn't
with a tarp
actually
or
cover. Yeah, you shouldn't cover it. You should not. Heat pumps they work all winter, and they're not supposed to be covered. You know, like in my case, I have some type of on it, like a stainless or roof that I've done, but I'm. All the four sides are exposed.
Okay.
What you need to make sure is your heat pump, if you have, and that's often you see dryer vents next to the heat pump. I don't know why, but it's always the case. Mm. You don't know who to blame, whether it's the dryer guy that installed the vent there, or that causes you issues because of that lint that flies. And when it's a bit windy, it goes into the coils, and then you have to clean it on a regular basis. You're fighting a losing battle. That is an issue. If you have that, and I say more so in the winter, is because in the winter we don't go out as often. So yeah. We tend to forget about it. That I would ask to be checked regularly if that's your case. Because, I mean, obviously, right now, changing the position is a bit, it's not the right time of the year to do it, but that is where you start running into problems.
All right. Ready to take your calls here at 514-790-0800. If you have a question or need some advice from Walter about a project at home or something that's not working at home, let us know at 514-790-0800. Exactly 9:15.
You might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
On a bright and clear and cold Saturday morning, it's exactly 20 minutes after 9 with Ken Connors along with Walter Assey from Renovco. You can call now at 514-790-0800 if there's an issue at home that you need some advice on. How important is it, when it comes to renovations, to always take into account a lighting plan?
Electric plan, lighting plan. All kind of plans, I would say, even a mechanical plan is important. Like example, when you're doing a basement and you are ducting for ventilation,
mm-hmm.
where to pass the duct, where to place the furnace, the plumbing mechanical, where to place the bathroom, the plumbing, you have to look where the main stack is. So everything has to be thought about, because theoretically, a plan, you know, you could do it, you could put place anything you want anywhere, but every decision that you do, if you don't do the plan behind the plan, you might waste thousands of dollars needlessly, okay? If you have a bathroom, for example, and you have that you place at the end of the basement and so far from the main stack, it's going to cost you a fortune to do the plumbing for it and to break the concrete and so on and so forth. So when I say mechanical plan, it's a way for us to look closer at the proposed design and say, okay, well, show this to the plumber, and the plumber's going to say, well, I'm going to need to break 20 feet to get there, rather than if we put it here, it's going to be only 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then you change the plan around. So electrical is as important as well, because it also gives a guideline. Now, the thing is, during the job, your implication as a homeowner should be at a minimal. It should be really minimal. You should not have to make these decisions while the guy is there,
right,
and you're rushed and you're under pressure and what have you. So once everybody have their own guide, their own plan, their own roadmap, you know, then you can rest assured that everything has been thought about meticulously, with you not having to make these rush decisions, and so on and so forth. And then your implication becomes minimal. It's only happened when, you know, for example, when he's installing something, he runs into a floor joist and the pot light cannot be at that position, it have to be at that position. But these are minimal decisions in the process. You don't have to be there with him that day deciding a three-way and a two-way and a one-way and what have you. These are a lot of decisions for you to take on the spot, especially when it's not your, you know, profession, or especially you don't do this, right, for a living. So that's why I'm saying the more plans you do ahead of time, the better it is. And that's where I find most of the time projects are lagging. Things that go wrong is because you don't have a plan.
Mm. The other thing I was going to bring up is because we have friends who are doing this, and we consider doing it as well when it comes to renovating the bathroom off the master bedroom, because as much as we enjoy that bathroom, and this is the case with our friends, they're redoing that bathroom because there's so much wasted space, and they have a huge space allotted for the tub,
mm-hmm.
which they never use.
Yeah,
and so they're pulling it out, installing a bigger shower, and just taking more advantage of all that unused floor space in a huge bathroom. Is that a common direction that people go in when it comes to remodeling a bathroom, just trying to take more advantage of of space and getting rid of things they don't use?
I have yet to see someone with that much, with those big tubs. And I know exactly the one you're talking about, these like corner tubs that, you know, those monstrosities that they installed in the 90s and beginning
exactly.
of the 2000s.
Yeah.
The main issue with that, they were very badly thought from the beginning, and I'll tell you why. Most homes, they have one hot water tank, you know, and the most common one is a 60-gallon. Well, to fill up this tub, this monstrosity, you would have to use, it's not even enough. You would use that, and then halfway through it, you're going to see that the water turns cold, so you can never actually use it to enjoy it. Unless you install another hot water tank, and most people won't do that.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
that's the main issue. So, at one point, people look at it. Yeah, it looks nice. It looks like it fits to people.
It's almost like a selling feature, right? When you walk into the house, oh, my God, wow.
Yeah, but then you realize that you never use it. And, you know, at the expense of that big tub, you have this small acrylic, you know, contractor, low-cost shower, which is not efficient, but you end up using that small thing every day.
We call it the phone booth.
The phone booth, exactly. I call it the coffin, but that's especially with the ones that have low ceilings. What's happening right now is you take these tubs out and you put this freestanding or tub that is much smaller, but it looks nicer and does not take that much space.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can afford to do a bigger shower, because that's what most people are doing today. Yeah. They're going with bigger showers. And, you know, plus, to be quite frank with you, the look is 10 times nicer. Like, from an impressive standpoint, you come in and you see all these slick, nice, modern, clean type
beautifully tiled
fixtures. Yeah, and now the tiles are much bigger. We call them slabs. We don't call them tiles anymore, mm-hmm. because, you know, some of them can go up to 10 feet long.
The other thing they're doing is they're ripping out their one little sink, and they're putting dual sinks.
Yeah, because now you have the space.
Yeah,
you have the space. And these, I mean, what's great about these spaces is that when they were built, they had that big monstrosity tub in mind. So these bathrooms are usually bigger than your standard bathroom. So you already have great bones to work with. You know, now you just have to put your designer hat on and really work out the space beautifully, because, like you said, you're going to save the shower area, which is going to be awesome. You're going to have a bigger one, and you're going to have the vanity. So the two things that you use a lot more often that are going to come in play to improve what was there before. That's the purpose of renovations. Like, when you do any type of renovation, if there's no added value to what you're doing, then there's something that you're thinking about that is wrong, okay? Like in kitchens, same thing. If you don't have more storage space or more counter space, or then probably your design have to be rethought, okay? You know, it's not just about replacing old material with new. It's also finding ways to make what you had better. And that's the idea with plans and, you know, designs and what have you.
Our house was built in the early 1990s. Did you just say a couple of minutes ago that the newer construction, newer homes, newer models, they're avoiding these huge tubs now?
Oh my God, yeah.
Okay.
That's big time. I haven't seen one in ages. I mean, I had this in my old home. I had this beautiful, and I'm not talking about the quarter one, corner one. I'm talking about the rectangular one. It looks like almost a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. It was nicely done by the previous owner, and they had the marble around. It was beautiful. The only thing is, it was very, and it was a jacuzzi type on top of that. So I used it once, and I filled it. I think I went through maybe halfway, and the water turned cold.
Yeah.
So I knew that right then and there that this is a very bad idea. So now, you know, freestanding tub is the thing right now. If you are going to go with a two-person tub, great. But please add the other hot water tank to the equation so you can use it, you know. If right. you're not, you're not going to use it.
Right.
Unless you have a gas or propane type hot water tanks that heats up quickly, then you have a better chance.
Right. That's Walter Rossi from Renovco. If you want to talk to him and pick his brain, it's 514-790-0800. Tom Whalen is standing by. Then we'll come back with more here on the Home Improvement Show.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Sunshine, blue skies, and a cold morning out there. Dress for it. 9:35. Good morning. It's the Home Improvement Show with Ken and Walter from Renovco. We're going to go to Montreal West and say hi to Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. You want to talk about your air exchanger?
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's for in the country, okay? The stove, it's a slow combustible wood stove with a Selkirk chimney.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs an air exchanger, you know? When you close everything and everything's airtight, it needs some kind of, to get the smoke out, you know? Could it go through the Selkirk chimney, the air exchanger? That's what I wanted to ask him.
Could it go through the what?
The chimney.
You mean the pipe for the air exchanger, the ducting?
Yeah.
You want to pass through the chimney? Why?
Well, else would you do it?
I mean, it depends where you place your units, right? So usually it's placed, we like to take it on the side of the house because of the intake. So I would not do it where the chimney is for sure.
Oh, okay.
You need the fresh air intake, right? So
yes.
The fresh air intake should not be next to anything that is, you know, creating fumes or smoke or anything like that. And if you are going to get anything, what I would also recommend is you get not an air exchanger per se, but a heat recovery system.
Heat recovery.
Correct. Because the problem with the air exchanger is great. It does the job of bringing in fresh air and what have you, but it does not heat the air coming in. You need, like, especially you're in the country, you have a lot of cold days. So what you need is not to lose that heat that you're creating. And a heat recovery system will exchange the air, will filter it down from pollutants, but will conserve the heat.
Interesting. And how is this installed?
Ventilation companies. There's a lot of different brands that you could choose from. And different ventilation companies use different brands, obviously, depending what they distribute. But like Venmar makes good exchange systems, air exchange systems, for example, and they have a good service après-vente, like a customer service after for their guarantees unit or as a guarantee.
But that's Venmar, V-E-N-M-A-R?
Yeah. Now, what I'm trying to also tell you is don't maybe necessarily stick to the brand as much as well as the installers. So if you know a good installer and he doesn't work with that brand, there's a lot of very good brands out there. I'm just saying one of the more common ones that are commonly used.
And where would they install it? I like to know all this stuff, before they do the work. Would it have to go through the ceiling and then to the outside, or?
There's no one right place to install it. It's a question of, where they're going to put the unit and where the ducts are going to go out. And they usually choose the best, least intrusive place, the shorter amount of ducting, and also the least visible. For example, the best place could be the front of the house because that's where you're placing the unit. But it's the worst possible place cosmetically for your curb appeal, right? So, that this is a conversation to be had is with the installer when he's there. He's going to come and give you a couple of options. And the first one that you want to think about is the curb appeal of your house because you don't want to have registered or ducts or anything protruding out from the front of the house. You usually want to do it on the side and what have you. So that's where you're going to make these decisions. So there's no right or wrong place where to install it. There's just a common sense that's going to have to play into this.
Hmm. How's that, Barbara?
Like what you said, like maybe you could go up through the attic, too?
Again, it's a question of sizing and ducting and spans and many different things, right?
Okay.
The last time we were looking at a job like this, the attic was 25 feet high.
Oh, God.
Hmm. Okay. It was a humongous attic, so I'm not going to pass the ducks through that attic, that's for sure, right?
Oh my God.
So that's why I'm saying, like, you know, it's a question of common sense. The word attic, and sometimes attics are problematic. They're not well sealed. There's a lot of things. So that's why I'm saying it's a conversation to be had. And, there's pros and cons to every decision you make. You just have to weigh them and take the best out of the situation. There's also
is this an expensive venture?
I feel the reward out of it is outweighs the investment because number one, the air quality gets to be tremendously better in the house.
Okay.
Like in so many ways, you have no idea. Especially if your house is well insulated, right? If it's well insulated, you're really breathing your own air and your own pollution all the time. So you need something that to evacuate that air, get in the fresh air, and you will feel a difference in the air quality, especially in the winter season. It's, you're out there in the country, so you don't want to flush air 3 times a day just to get fresh air into the house.
Yes.
Especially when it's minus 20, minus 30, it's not really a very smart thing to do. And you know what? If let's say you do that as a solution, because I hear that all the time. They say, I'll open windows, I'll flush the air in and out and what have you for 10, 15 minutes a day. Well, fine, you're right. But then you're still throwing money for all that energy that you're losing, right? So
that's
like,
right.
So, if you calculate how much energy you're doing that per year, maybe it's cheaper to install a heat recovery system.
Barbara, you have your homework to do.
Yeah, I know. The worker there said, open the window. I'm thinking, yeah, right. God, yeah. I understand. Okay, I just wanted to check with you, you know.
Very good. Barbara, okay. Thanks for the phone call. Good luck with it.
Okay. Thank you for your time, eh?
Oh, absolutely. Bye. Thank you. Let's go to Matthew out in Pierreville. Matthew, good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
It's just for an opinion.
Yeah.
We were painting. We have a flat roof, and we were on the upper apartment painting a tenant's apartment. And over the past week, we heard some light crackling noise. It's an asphalt gravel roof. We just wanted to know if that's normal. It wasn't anything that lasted long, but just maybe 10 to 15 seconds, a little crackling, and then it went away. It was when it was getting colder, like from the afternoon to the evening. Mm. We just wanted to know, is that something normal, or is that something we should be concerned about? The roof was made in 2010, and there's no water infiltration or anything. We just wanted to know why we heard this noise when we were painting the upper apartment on the duplex.
Cause of concern there?
The roof itself is probably not the one that's not the culprit behind the noise, because there is elasticity in the tar, and that does not crack or make that cracking noise that you're talking about. So there should be no cause for concern for the finishing part of the roof, if you're saying it's the tar and gravel, because gravel, even when it cracks, does not make a cracking noise, right? It dries up, and you're saying it's a new roof, so it's not supposed to have dried up already. But even when it dries up, it does not make a cracking noise. What you probably heard is the wood in the attic that is moving, expanding, contracting due to the different temperatures that you have. And that's what you probably heard. It occurs, especially when you have extreme temperature variance within the same day. It could happen. It's not cause for concern. We've been in certain cases that are rare that there was no adequate roof trusses in the attic, and there was a bit of stress. But you're saying you have a flat roof, so that's highly unlikely that's the case, especially in times where we don't have loads of snow to create that weight. So what probably happened is that your framing or the wood in your attic just, moved, and that's what created that noise.
Nothing.
You okay? I thank you for that opinion. Could it be the day before it rained, and that what we heard was because the change, we're in a time right now where it gets to be cold quite fast during the evening. Could it be that it was the water that was making that crackling noise from being liquid to being solid? I thank you for talking about the wood, but could it be something like that too? Because it's close to the ceiling, it's not like a big attic, it's a flat. So I was wondering, could that be also something
it
that we
could
heard?
Be, but I usually see that more in the opposite sense. I see it more when it's solid and it's turning to liquid. That's when I would hear the ice cracking. It's not
the other way.
It's not the other way.
Okay.
It is typical, though, to hear because of the drastic changes we have. I mean, in this, just look at our month. We had in December, we had 16 degrees, and then minus 10.
Yeah.
Right.
And usually during the day it's hot and hot. It's warmer, and then during the night it's a very extreme change in temperature. So, what I would see is if I hear it more often, then I could log it in temperature wise what's happening. Just to kind of have a track record. But,
right.
I mean, cracking noise in attics is not something that is unheard of. It's pretty common.
Matthew, we got to run. Hope that was some help
Thank
for you.
Thank you. Absolutely. All have
right.
a nice day.
You
Thank
too.
You for that. Very much appreciated.
Thank you for the call. 947. Right back to the phone here in a second at 514-790-0800.
Good. This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
At 9:50, we have time for a few more calls. We're going to go to Wes Bolton and bring in Richard. Richard, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Walter and Ken.
Hi. Talk to me about the bathroom. What's going on?
Okay. So I have a contractor after about 2 years of pestering, he's finally agreed to come in, and it's a house built on the side of a slope, okay, side of a hill, and this is the lower level, so part of the house is completely large windows, it's exposed, and the back part is partially underground, so, as an ordinary house would be. So there I have a bathroom, a very small bathroom, with a very tiny little shower, and I want to put in a bigger shower, which I'm going to borrow room from an adjacent room, because he's going to do 3 rooms into 2 rooms, and then borrow some space in an adjacent room to put in a walk-in shower, okay? And so, it's first of all, it's winter work, which, you know, is always a bit of a concern, albeit everything would be completely put plastic all around and so on. I had already done the walls and the exterior walls and put in insulation and so on and prepped it sort of for him to make it a little bit easier and exposed all the shower. It had before tile everywhere. It was a house built in 63, and it was kind of overbuilt. It was someone that really, I guess, had a lot of money to put into it, and so walls were thick and so on and so forth. But here my big concern, my question is, what should I be aware of? They're going to break, the toilet remains in the same place, okay, which is really close to the stack. I have 2 bathrooms that have been renovated a few years back over above, okay? But however, the sink is going to change places with the new shower going in, okay? So the floor has to be broken. So the proximity of the floor to be broken with the stack is fairly close, let's say a maximum of 4 feet, okay, maximum for both the shower and sink.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've also got to put in, obviously, between the 2 rooms, it's a supporting wall, and I have to have put in a header, okay? Now, the question of my big concern is, because we've renovated most of this house, you know, this gentleman, this contractor, has done the other part, some of the other part, and did a very, very nice job in finishing and so on, all the gyps and so on. The question is, my concern about breaking the floor, okay? What should I be concerned about? Winter, breaking the floor. Can I expect any problems with hydrostatic pressure, water? You know, it's obviously going to create some mess there, but I can't be without 2 bathrooms that are up overhead. You know, I can't live without them. So is this a big job when they break the floor, even though it's not a huge piece to break?
So the quick answer would be you should not be concerned at this time of the year. As a matter of fact, if there's any high water table, usually it happens in the thaw period. But I mean, even at that, if you have issues, even without you breaking the slab, you will have telltale signs. You'll have efflorescence on the slab itself. If there's so much water underneath, you would have sometimes some dampness that you see on the slab. So you shouldn't have that as a main concern if you don't have telltale signs to it, especially at this time of the year, actually. It's a good time to do it.
Yeah.
Especially you're in, I don't know where West Bolton is.
Rome Lake area, Lac Brome,
okay.
Yeah, so, it's really just adjacent to it, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, at this time of the year, things are frozen and... I don't see a real situation there. I mean, where it gets to be, where you might see things, because they still have to jackhammer the slab, especially if the house was overbuilt, so chances are it's a 5-inch, 6-inch slab. So you might have to have a bit of collateral damage, some cracks, you know, things crack, you know, wall that cracks or what have you, just with the vibration, but that's, I mean, to a minimal, and it's not that concerning itself. It's a messy job in the sense that, yeah, you still have to break the concrete, you know, and then, you know, have to dig and you know, and what have you. The main concern is when they do their plumbing, just ensure that you have the right slopage. That's common mistake that we see often.
Right.
And then the other concern becomes the venting of whatever you're installing in the basement.
Right.
You know, because sometimes it's you have certain hindrances in vents. Mm-hmm. You can't connect to the vent through the roof, so you have to put an automatic vent. Just be aware of what you're doing. Okay, and if you have an automatic vent, well, you know, every few years it has to be changed. So have it accessible.
Now, when you say an automatic vent, there is the stack, as I said, just the toilet backs onto the wall, inside wall, but right next to the foundation wall, okay? Mm-hmm. And the I think the slope in that toilet is good. I don't know, because the septic tank is really buried about maybe 10 feet from the foundation just outside, okay?
So wait a minute. That's one piece of information that's actually important.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying that are you going to be installing a pump for that toilet? Are you lower than...
No.
So you're not lower?
No, I'm not lower, no.
Okay, that's
I mean, my septic tank is low. It's, as a matter of fact, it was just cleaned a couple of months ago, so... I looked at where the pipe is coming out, you know, I measured it, and there's very, very good depth. In other words, the septic tank is low in comparison to the floor on the inside.
That's actually good. Okay.
We have about a minute, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's on a slope, by the way. It just drops off enormously, so I know there's no water or anything is going to accumulate outside the foundation because the slope is quite...
That's good.
The automatic vent, is that exactly?
It's the plumbing vent, right? So, where you're going to draw air for the toilet and so on and so forth.
Well, it goes right up through the floor above and then right up through the roof.
So your plumbing vent is accessible. You see it. You can connect to it.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes,
that is awesome. That's you know...
It's virtually all exposed because they're going to shore up above... because two bathrooms had been renovated above it, and they had to cut away some things. You know how they do when they do this, plumbers?
Yeah.
So they're going to shore up some, these are 2x10s going across and so on.
So just to kind of resume, to give you like as much information as possible in the few seconds that are left, because Ken keeps on showing me these faces. So So number one is make sure that you do report the concrete, because sometimes I've seen it very often that they say, okay, well, we're putting floor on top. Don't do that. Whatever you dig out, it's report. You're not saving money by not doing it.
Yeah.
Make sure that it's well sloped. Make sure it's connected to the vents adequately. Make sure you install the fan and the roughing, the infrastructure for the fan to the exhaust.
Yeah.
That's really all what you have to worry about.
Yeah.
The rest of it is just the adequate construction of the shower and everything else. I mean, with the membranes, the Schluter panels, and everything else.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I appreciate that. Then.
Thank you, Richard. Good luck with that.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Walter, thank you, my friend, for a good hour.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Stay warm. The full forecast is standing by with Tom Whalen, and so is Lisa Christensen with The Car Show, 514-790-0800. Jimmy G, thank you so much. Jimmy's sticking around to run things for the next couple of hours. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning as of 6:00.